When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to Grant and Danny. We are live at the Crystal City Sports Pub getting you ready for another weekend of football. An awesome college slate starts tonight into tomorrow. College football playoffs, first time ever, and the NFL winding down. We've got playoff ramifications all over the ledger, including in Landover, Maryland, at Northwest Stadium, where the Commanders will be hosting the Philadelphia Eagles at 1 o'clock on Sunday. Caller number 10 right now at 800-636-1067. Congrats. You're going to win two tickets to see the Capitals take on the New York Rangers in the good seats. For tickets and the complete cap schedule, go to thefandc.com/contests. This is courtesy of the Washington Capitals. We appreciate everybody listening to the show all over the DMV on our flagship 106.7 in Richmond on AM 910, FM 105.1. If you are watching our streaming video on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page or listening on the Odyssey app, thank you very much for making the show part of your day. With that, let's get to our Beltway Blitz. Start you off on the ice.
The Washington Capitals.
Our guy, the voice of the Capitals, is John Walton, who joins us now. The news today on the Caps was not ideal, but tell you what, I'm not overly bummed about it. Still seems like a speedy recovery for Alex Ovechkin, John, but he's not going to play before the Christmas holiday.
Yeah, you don't want to rush him back, and I guess, you know, we get caught up in, hey, it's going to be sooner than we think, and with the news coming out of practice yesterday, hey, maybe it is before the holidays, and just after is okay, too. So they only really have to get through tonight's game with Carolina, and then you've got Los Angeles here on Sunday at 5, and then we've got to run to Boston quick for a game against the Bruins before we get 3 days off. So, but on the other side of that, you've got a day of practice on that Thursday, the 27th, fly to Toronto, morning skate. It probably makes sense. There have been so many back-to-backs. You weren't going to bring him back on Sunday anyway because he would have been playing two games in as many. It would have been one game and a break. So it probably is the right decision. And when he loves playing in Toronto as much as he does, I'm sure that he's going to come fired out of the cannon when we get there next Saturday night.
So, John, we're not used to this. They dropped a couple straight games here on their mini road trip, Dallas, Chicago, travel logistics notwithstanding. What went wrong?
There was not enough offense. I mean, there's not enough 5-on-5. I thought the game in Dallas, I thought they did what they've done for the most part. They've got decent chances. They probably had better than Dallas did. It was a close game, and they just didn't quite have enough. Chicago, they weren't very good at all. There just wasn't enough from the jump. They just didn't seem to have it. And, yeah, the travel's an issue, and Spencer Carberry didn't want to have anything to do with that post game when he's talking about it. We were asking him questions, but we weren't getting anywhere quick. It was obviously a frustrating loss for him and the team and the coaching staff, but really felt like they just didn't have anything of any offensive jam. And it's kind of quieted down here the last week or two. So tonight, it's going to look a little different. Andrew Mangiapane is going to be up on the top line. He's going to play on that left side as Protas is going to move down. So Strome and Wilson with Mangiapane. Connor McMichael's been a little quiet, too. No goals in five coming in. So he, Pierre-Luc Dubois, and Alexei Protas are going to be aligned. Just getting a fresh paint job on it, I think, just to see how it goes tonight. And, you know, this happens through the course of 82 games. We'll see what happens with it tonight, but I would imagine with as many offensive weapons as they have and as well as they've been going by and large through the course of the season, I would say a little bit of a rumble strip, not much more than that.
John, the Hurricanes are excellent. They're in town tonight for a 7 o'clock puck drop. They're 20-10 with a loser point on the season. Not quite as good as the Capitals, but who
still
really? Who's as good as the Capitals? What do you make of the Hurricanes?
Good team, offensive, fast, and I've talked with Spencer this morning for our pregame tonight, and he has a pretty good handle, I think, on the Canes and, you know, what they do. They just play hard. I mean, they come at you under Rod Brind'Amour, and they don't give you a lot of time and space, and they've got a lot of speed. I mean, Marty Natchez is having a fantastic year. He's got 44 points in 31 games. Andrei Svechnikov has always done well against the Caps, and he does pretty well against everybody. Sebastian Aho. Containing their top six is not easy, but they also haven't won a lot on the road lately. They had a lot of home games. They haven't had to leave Raleigh a whole lot. And when they haven't won. They're 0-3-1 in the last four. So I think the wake-up call that was Chicago is what gets them going tonight. I think they've been winning and not with their best. Thinking back to the Buffalo game last Saturday, yeah, they won, but they weren't at the top of their game. I think Chicago's a wake-up call, and I think they're able to come out and just establish a little bit of first period dominant. Both these teams are pretty good in the first period, but I think the Caps are a little angry about what happened in Chicago and will come out fine tonight.
Yeah, not a complaint here, an observation. They've come from behind really, really, really well. It's almost extraordinary how comfortable the Caps seem playing with the deficit. That's one of the things, though, you kind of live dangerously that way, though, right? Sometimes you can't come back, and it's not your fault. Doesn't mean you didn't play well. Is that something that you've kind of got an eyeball on, John? I know they've had good first periods, too, but it feels like they've been behind even in a lot of their wins. They deserve credit for that, but also you're falling behind a lot.
Yeah, it's crazy that you get to this point in the season and you have more wins when you give up the first goal as
right.
opposed to scoring the first goal. That's not usually the way hockey works, but it seems to work for this bunch. And they always feel like they're in it. They never feel like they're out of it. They always band together. You talk to them after a game like that, and they say, you know, there's a lot of belief in the room. It doesn't matter what's going on. We feel like we're going to win a hockey game. And by and large, that's been true. But to your point, I would rather see them, you know, get that crooked number in the first period and then play a little bit more defensively, not have to worry about what's going on maybe in trying to get a comeback together. You want to be able to play from in front. That's just the way the NHL is. But it is nice to have in your pocket that you have the swagger of a team that says, you know what, we don't care if we give up the first goal, we're going to be fine. And more often than not, that's been the case. They've been pretty good at doing that, too. Well, hopefully it doesn't happen that way tonight, but if it does, they'll take it as long as they get 2 points inside the division. Big, big Metro clash with these guys tonight.
John, have a good call, and call a bunch of Caps goals, would you?
Hey, let's do it, fellas. Thank you.
Be good,
buddy,
and have a great holiday. There's John Walton on the Beltway Blitz. Let's keep it moving and talk a little NFL. And to do that with us, we've got our buddy Nate Davis, USA Today Sports. Why don't we start with the double dip tomorrow, beginning with the AFC collision, the Texans and the Chiefs. Do you think Houston could make a playoff run, or are they just not as good as they were supposed to be?
Yeah, Grant, I don't think they're as good as we thought. Obviously, C.J. Stroud's had a bit of a regression from his rookie year. You know, still solid season, but I don't know. I thought they were a team that let some young guys that were up and coming last year, like Jonathan Grenard, go and instead brought in older guys like Danielle Hunter. And I thought it was a mistake to some degree in the spring, and now I kind of more so feel that way. And then, you know, you kind of look at some of their offensive line issues in terms of protection. You know, you've seen Joe Mixon have less than 2 yards to carry, I think, 3 times in the last 5 weeks. And, you know, they just have looked to me like a kind of your classic one-and-done team at this point.
What'd you make of that Chargers-Broncos game last night? Kind of reshuffled the seating at the back end of the AFC playoffs. What did we learn about each team?
Yeah, I think we learned the Chargers, to me, are kind of proven that they're becoming that tough team that they want to be. You know, they're able to win a game against a quality opponent, even though they don't have all their guys out there. You've seen Jim Harbaugh have a direct impact, you know, on the game before halftime, and you know, kind of everyone citing that as the reason that really propelled them after kind of a rough first half. And you know, this is a team I think it's going to continue to get better. I mean, it's a, you know, pretty remarkable. They're not a huge turnaround. I mean, they had talent last year, but I mean, they're certainly pointed in the right direction, and I think the arrow's pointed up for them. don't know that they'll make a deep run, but I don't know that anyone's going to want to face them, you know, next month either.
How about the second of the games tomorrow, AFC North, Steelers, Ravens? If Baltimore wins, I mean, they are in at that point a record tie for the top of the division. Baltimore's favored to win. It looks like they're back in the driver's seat maybe in the division. How do you see that?
Yeah, I'll be up there for that one, guys. I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's kind of remarkable if you just kind of look that, you know, the Steelers haven't lost in Baltimore in 5 years. But a lot of those games, Lamar Jackson didn't play in. A lot of those games were kind of, you know, week 18 kind of games and maybe didn't have a whole lot of ramifications. I think Lamar's kind of played in one meaningful game in Baltimore against the Steelers. So I think you kind of throw some of the history out. If the Ravens win tomorrow, I still think they're – I think strength of victory or something. Or a common opponent tiebreaker, I think, will keep the Steelers in first place. But you basically got a dead heat at that point. And we've kind of seen the Steelers offense kind of limited by the absence of George Pickens. And he's not going to be there again tomorrow either. So I think this is a big opportunity for the Ravens. I do think that Lamar and those guys probably – really want to prove to themselves that they can kind of beat the boogeyman, and they're going to need to if they want to have any shot of having a home game in the playoffs.
Who's a dangerous NFC team that nobody's really paying attention to right now?
Yeah, I feel like we all maybe have kind of said it, Danny, but I mean, I feel like nobody's really given the Vikings probably the props they deserve. Uh-huh. I mean, this team could be the number one seed. It's just a few things break their way. I don't think anyone's really putting them in the Super Bowl conversation, and it's kind of understandable why. I mean, hard to maybe believe in a guy like Sam Darnold, despite the fantastic year that he's had. But I mean, they're 12-2. I mean, at some point you can't argue with that. They've beaten the brakes off of a pretty, you know, a number of good teams. Took the Lions to the wire when the Lions kind of had everybody in their lineup. So. I don't think that we're quite talking about them enough. And I'd also throw in the Rams. I thought they would make a deep run last year. Kind of had a tough, hard luck loss at Detroit in the wild card round. But I think they're another team that's kind of rounding into form and peaking. And even the Packers. I mean, I really think a lot of those teams at the bottom of the NFC bracket could make a lot of noise, particularly when you see you know, the issues the Lions have up there at the top. Is the NFC South team going to be great? I mean, we'll see. But I think the NFC playoffs should be at least look like more inviting matchups to me than the AFC side.
Nate, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
All right, guys. Happy holidays.
You too, got bye. It. Grant and Danny's Beltway Blitz continues. Let's talk about the local footballers. And to discuss the Commanders on the Beltway Blitz, making his debut, buddy of mine, local guy who actually writes at NBC News, was in the press box for a Commanders game recently. That's Greg Rosenstein, who hops on the Beltway Blitz. That's right. You should check out his piece. He wrote a national story for NBC on what has been a awful last few decades of football and the fact that the Commanders are starting to turn a corner here. So, Greg, give us an idea of just why you wanted to write the piece and other than myself, and thank you for including me, who you talked to and what you learned.
Thanks for having me on. And yes, Grant is a honorary Annandale Adam. I will accept him into the group there.
Thank you.
But the story basically came about when I thought, as a fan myself, you know, how horrible life has basically been for the last 30 years and how we haven't had any happiness. And then finally this year, things have really seemed to change. And I think if you ask a lot of my friends, if you ask a lot of people who I spoke with in the story, you know, there's just a completely new feeling for this franchise. So I wanted to kind of let the national audience know that even though maybe for us as locals, we know, you know, how hard things have been and how things have been changing, you know, what people have really gone through. And I'll just say the people I spoke with were multiple fans. And in addition to that, Jeffrey Wright, the actor, he spoke a lot about life as a fan of this team. His mom had season tickets since 1970. Peter Rosenberg, the host and radio host in New York. And Eddie Wong, who's kind of a celebrity chef, and also is a TV host as well.
That's so weird. I was looking for my quotes from me in there, Greg. I didn't see any. That's tough. I'm kidding.
We had a quota for the amount of 106.7 The Fan host.
Yeah, like I don't. Yeah. You can't.
Danny you'd have to be in the press box for him to have bumped into.
Well, I was going
to
say, you can't have two St. Albans guys in there. Jeffrey Wright, shout out, Bulldogs. But how sustainable do you feel like this difference is? I think that's the most important part to me. Is it's nice to have a nice season. There have been some nice seasons, you know, once in a blue moon every handful of years. This feels different, though, doesn't it?
I think it definitely feels different, and it really comes from the top. I think a lot of the fans I spoke with said the biggest thing is just the fact that Dan Snyder is no longer here, basically ruining the franchise, ruining the fan experience. And once he sold, I think everything basically changed. I know, Danny, you've spoken in the past about how, you know, you felt like this team had, like, extra weights on them at the starting line, you know, because he was in charge. But now that he's gone, I think with Josh Harris, Magic Johnson, the coaching staff they put in place, and now that they finally have a starting quarterback that seems to be a future quarterback for this team for years to come, I think the general vibe is this can be sustained long term.
What do you think a playoff berth would do? And if we want to get real crazy, what might a playoff win do this year for this operation? Meaning the new name, the growing fan base again, the whole deal.
I think it would be monumental. I think, as you and I spoke about, Grant, like, this team has always been the number one in D.C. for years and years, no matter how bad they are. And so it's a kind of a fan base that's, like, just waiting for happiness, waiting to erupt. And I think if they finally had something to cling on to, a playoff win, the first one since 2005, I think that would do, you know, wonders for the fan base and for the future of this team. I don't think people are necessarily thinking, oh, this is a Super Bowl winning team this year. But I definitely think a playoff win would show, hey, we have major potential. With the offseason coming up, things can really be different.
Greg, you mentioned the fan base. Where is this fan base now? Grant and I, you know, have a pretty unique position that, you know, it allows us to kind of have direct, indirect contact with so many fans over the course of these years. I know it's not the 100 out of 100 that the fan base was pre-name change, before all the shebinguses or whatever. It's back. But to what degree? Give me kind of a state of the union here.
I don't think it's necessarily what it was, you know, pre-Snyder levels, but I definitely think fans are starting to come back. I think once he sold the team, fans who maybe felt kind of, for lack of a better word, gross supporting him, you know, and maybe they didn't like the name at the time, and now that the name has been changed, I think fans are really starting to feel like things are back. And I definitely think that, you know, talking to other fans about this team, the investment is there. I think if you, like, ask some fans in the past handful of years, you know, whether they won or lost, you know, they wanted to see what was going to happen with the team, but at the same time, did it really matter? There was no hope. There was really no chance anything would happen. And I think the fact that they're actually winning games, and with the new ownership group and everybody in charge right now, you know, wins do matter. Losses do matter. People are taking it more seriously than ever before, and I think that's a really good thing.
Great job. Thank you, and it's a really good story. People should check it out. I retweeted it at Grant H. Paulson. You want to go look for the link. Greg, thank you.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, yeah, Greg. You got it. That is your Beltway Blitz. Next, let's get into some of the individual props that we see for this week. Try to make some of our predictions for how different guys on the team are going to play. We'll go over or under. You're listening to Grant and Danny taking you up to 6:30. Remember, we are at the Crystal City Sports Pub. So come on out and enjoy a football Friday. It's a field trip. We are out here with you guys until the end of the program tonight. You're locked into the Fan. Believe it or not, it's week 16 in the NFL season already. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. John McMullen's going to join us in a half hour. He will help us scout the Eagles. Sounds like A.J. Brown is a go. He's telling the media today that he is absolutely going to play, despite the issues that he's been having with his knee since getting rolled up on awkwardly. Did you see that injury?
I actually didn't see the play, no.
Foot got landed on. It looked like a high ankle sprain or a knee issue. I know initially a lot of the, I call them Twitter doctors, like the medical people that do fantasy advice on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is a several-week injury. He came back in the game, I don't know, within an hour or so, and next thing you know, he's playing this week.
But I'll never know. I mean, just like the certain plays, right? Just go back to Washington's game this past week. The Jeremy Chinn play looks it looks like, oh, my God, like so bad.
I'd put that on par with the Eckler concussion.
Yeah.
Right? Where,
you
where go, he's like unconscious on the field.
I mean, just two guys, like head bump, like, oh, my God, looks so bad. Whereas Zach Ertz, I'm like, oh, did he cramp up? Did he twist something on the way? Did he land kind of hard on his leg? I'm not making light of it. I'm just saying you never know just how the, a certain collision ends up doing it, man.
We're live at the Crystal City Sports Pub. We are out and about on a field trip Friday. You can come on out and spend some time with us, watch the show, watch college football, and get something to eat. Why don't we bring in Dad, our producer, Darius Dameron, back in the studio to give us some of the FanDuel props, individual player props for Commanders Eagles, make some predictions on how we think the game's going to play out.
What's up, guys? I miss you back here. Let's start with the passing props. Jaden Daniels. They have him set at 214.5 passing yards. What do we got, over or under?
Under for me on this one. I don't think this is a good day throwing the football. I think Philadelphia's defense is excellent. I think they're going to be really, really good when there are an incredibly limited number of options for Jaden Daniels to throw to. They know it. We know it. It's Terry McLaurin or bust, and I think the answer is bust.
He threw for 191 in his worst game of the season against the Eagles last time. Part of the reason why was a final drive where Washington made the move down the field, mm-hmm. got a touchdown, got closer. Some garbage time production, obviously. Having said that, he still got to 191. And I think whether they're chasing the game from behind and they get some garbage time production or they win the game outright, he's going to have to make more plays. I will say over, but barely. I don't think he throws for 230 or anything like that. But I'm going to say slightly over 214 and a hook. I think it's in the high teens, maybe low 220s, and he has two touchdowns. So I will say over as Washington keeps the game close, scores in the 20s.
Speaking of 191, the opposing quarterback has his passing total set at 191.5. That will be Jalen Hurts for the Eagles.
I will go under that total for Jalen Hurts. He did throw for 290 last week, which is his highest passing total since week 3 against the New Orleans Saints. But 108, 118, 179, the three games before that, they just haven't been clean throwing the football. It has not really looked right. I also think they're going to be able to run the ball. They're a top five rushing offense. Washington is a bottom five run defense. I think Saquon Barkley is going to get 25 carries. Jalen Hurts is probably only going to throw the ball 18, 19, 20 times. I will go under the total for Jalen Hurts.
I think this is a slight over, but like ever so slight, by like a yard or two. I don't think this, to your point, is a 300-yard passing game, which they don't really do. I think it's there are a couple big plays where Washington maybe bets big, goes all in, it gets picked up, A.J. Brown catch and run, or Devontae Smith doing the same thing. I think they get over, but barely. That's right around where I think the total's going
to
be.
Moving on to the rushing props, let's start with quarterback one, Jaden Daniels, 39.5. rushing yards, over or under?
This is an over. And by the way, we have reached the point of the season now where if you're not going over, you're probably going to be wrong. If you look at how often he's running recently and for the yards he's running for, two of the last three games, 66, 74 yards. He's run seven or more times in four straight games. One of the big problems against the Eagles last time is that he wasn't able to make enough plays with his feet. Danny, you accentuated
yep.
several times the play where he didn't get out of the pocket, couldn't shake one defender. I think it was N'Kobe Dean, the linebacker who brought him to the ground. He just didn't look right. I think a healthy, refreshed Jaden Daniels is going to run probably 9 or 10 times. I'm going to say for somewhere around 70 yards this week. I think it's going to be a heavy dose of Daniels because they're light on pass catchers. They're missing three of their top four receivers and receptions on the year. And Danny, no Austin Eckler as the safety valve. So a lot of times, instead of that check down, we're pulling the ball down and running.
I think it's under. And I just kind of gives you an idea how I think the game is going to go. Philadelphia gets paid to play, too, and they're really good at this. And you see the 007 spy technique that they employed last time. I think there'll be more of the same. They're not concerned about your option out of the backfield. They're not concerned about backup tight ends or wide receivers off the scrap heap. K.J. Osborne does not scare them. They will be able to leave somebody there and be able to contain Jaden Daniels with their rush lanes, discipline. That's what Vic Fangio's defenses are. They are disciplined. They are accountable. They force you to do things you don't want to do. And I'm worried about this one in terms of rushing totals. If he breaks free a couple times, I think those are game changers. I just don't see it happening, unfortunately.
Yeah, the Eagles, by the way, if you're curious here, over the last couple weeks, you know, have not faced there's not really quarterbacks like Jaden Daniels, if we're being honest, but the couple of mobile guys that they have faced, you know, Russell Wilson, they mostly kept in the pocket, 4 carries for 13 yards. Now, he doesn't run a whole lot anymore, as most people know, but, you know, the week before that, Bryce Young's a guy who can make plays with his feet. Not looking to run, but can extend plays, can create. In that game, Bryce Young ran for 30 yards. So they have shown that they'll give up some scrambles, especially on obvious passing downs.
Brian Robinson's going to be looking for a bounce back this week. They have his total set at 56.5 rushing yards.
Under. I think Philadelphia knows. They know that the offense is buttered in these two ways, Robinson early and McLaurin, and I think they're going to be able to take it away. I think Robinson goes under. It's going to be a frustrating day on the ground.
I will go over on this. They're going to try to stop me, Rob. I think they will mostly do that. But 56.5 is now low. I mean, we've gotten to a point because of his injuries, because of the ineffectiveness against the Saints, and it wasn't his fault in this game, but the Cowboys game as well, that, you know, he could have a bad game and run for 60 yards on 19 carries.
Yep.
And still be over that. I think the commitment's going to be there because they need to run clock. They need to stay on the field. They need to keep Philly's offensive explosiveness, you know, to a minimum. They got to help their defense not wear down against Saquon Barkley. So I think it's going to be quantity over quality. I'm going to say like over 17, 18 carries for B-Rob. It's not going to be more than 80 yards or anything, but it'll be over 56.5.
Can the Commanders keep Barkley in check? They have him set at 94.5 rushing yards.
Over. I think he blows past this total. I think it's going to be a lot like the first game where they'll do a decent enough job for a while, but it's a matter of time before that guy breaks one. It's going to be, you don't have the right defense called, we think it's going to one of their outside guys, or you've got a pass coverage called, or, you know, maybe you got a run blitz and he, you know, breaks a tackle and squirts through. There's going to be that home run type run. And that's what I'm worried about. So I think he goes over that total.
Yeah, he just does it every week. This past week against the Steelers, who are just a different level of run-stopping defense notwithstanding, 94.5 is child's play for him. I mean, look at his totals on the season. 124, 107, 255, 146, 159, 108, 176. He just gets there yawning, waking up in the morning. It's the best offensive line in the league. Look at Washington's defense. They are, as we talked about, you know, 25th in yards per play against the run, giving up about 4.8 a pop, and you're going up against, offensively, the team that does one of the best jobs in the league, fourth at yards per play. So it's just a bad matchup in that way. Barkley is inevitable. He's going to get over 100 yards in this game.
FanDuel thinks that Jalen Hurts is going to run the tush push approximately 36 times. They have his rushing total set at 36.5.
I'll say under that. I think he has a touchdown on that annoying play. Might have two, because he is automatic from the goal line anytime they get close.
Yep.
They like, if they're 2 yards away, they'll run that play twice. Just saddle up, buckle up. That's what they're going to be doing. They came here to do the tush push. But to me, and I don't know if you're seeing the same thing when you watch him, he does not really play with the same kind of aggressiveness as a runner that he did a couple years ago. It's one of the reasons, actually, I think, you know, his production's waned a little bit. But, you know, lately, he's been more aggressive. He had 15 runs, only for 45 yards, 3 a pop this past week. But mostly, you know, you see the 7, 8, 9 carry games where he's in the 20s or 30s. It's a lot of scrambles out of bounds. It's a lot of, like, let me dive forward to avoid a sack. He doesn't really run to run that often anymore.
Yeah, I'm not going to be playing this prop because that's right around where I feel like he's going to end up, in that 33, 34-yard range. I don't think he hits the homer, kind of to your point. I think there's, you know, 10 carries, but 3 or 4 of them are tush pushes, so that limits his yards per carry. I think there'll be a couple times where he scrambles out of danger. And, again, he's just looking to move the chains maybe, as opposed to Daniels is, you know, losing guys in his wake on the way to like a 20-some yarder like it did last week against New Orleans. So I would say slightly under this total, but it's right around there.
Quickly onto the receiving props. The only Commanders receiver listed is Terry McLaurin, and they have him set at 60.5 receiving yards.
Under, sadly. He's gone over this total 3 straight weeks, and It's because it's Philadelphia who shoved it on him and didn't let him do anything at all. He's number one on the scouting report, number two on the scouting report. He's their passing game at this stage. The only guy that can hurt you, they'll pay a lot of attention to him and force someone else to beat them, no matter how much he moves around. Hopefully it's more than last time where he didn't at all at Philadelphia, but I think he's in that, like, four-catch, 41-yard kind of range for the day, and we're going to be frustrated.
I'll go over that. They don't have other players that are going to be featured. It's a low enough total that he's the bulk of their passing game. The highest quarterback rating for any passer in the league throwing to any wide receiver this year is Daniels throwing to McLaurin.
Oh, how about that?
He also doesn't need to be open to catch the football. That was my great frustration with his lack of productivity and involvement against the Eagles last time. Everyone made it some story about, oh, well, look how he was covered. Look what the rookie Quinyon Mitchell did against him. How about throw him the ball anyway? He doesn't have to be open to catch it. He's going to move the chains with or without space. They have to throw him the football because they just don't have anybody else. Who's going to put up yards? Zach Ertz moving forward. Let's say he plays. Is he the same guy? You could be without three of your top four pass catchers, and he's the last man standing. So I think it's like a 10-target week with seven or eight catches. I don't think it's going to be a great game for him. I think it's probably like 65, 70 yards.
Workmanlike.
Yeah, but it's going to be over that in a possession game where they force him the ball around the line of scrimmage.
A.J. Brown, meet Marshawn Lattimore. They have A.J. Brown's receiving total set at 77.5.
So I got over here, and my thinking is they're going to move A.J. Brown around a lot and try to prevent that Lattimore matchup as much as possible. Now, it's up to Washington if it's nothing but traveling or Lattimore lines up on one side to try to keep things simple and easy. I don't know, but I think Philadelphia knows that this is their easy button. This is how you get to what you want, which is giving the ball to Saquon Barkley. I think you're going to see A.J. Brown with some gaudy totals this time. I think they got that not big A.J. Brown game the first time.
He has only gone over that three of the last seven games. When he's gone for 100 against the Cowboys, the Rams, and the Steelers. But we've seen 43, 66, 65, and 36-yard games sprinkled in there for him. That inconsistency is what is annoying to the 27-year-old wide receiver who's been at odds with his quarterback. I'll go under. I think it's a run-heavy approach, run-heavy game. I think Devontae Smith worries me a little more. You know, maybe it's Dallas Goedert. It's stuff underneath to the tight end. But I think they – he's the guy they plan for to try to take away in the secondary with Lattimore and maybe some help as well. Make Devontae Smith, who has been in and out of the lineup, not healthy, make those other guys beat you, not the three-time Pro Bowler who has feasted
he
on Washington.
He has had such good meals.
Not to mention, he's also very banged up after this week, missing practice time. Says he's going to play, but maybe that's another reason to not think he'll have one of his bigger games. Grant and Danny on the Fan will scout the Eagles. We'll ask about A.J. Brown coming up in 20 minutes when we go behind enemy lines. But next, the Nationals lost out on one of the players they apparently really liked. We will give you the details on that. And look at the playoff game in college football tonight that all eyes will be on. You're listening to the Fan. Welcome back to Grant and Danny, live from the Crystal City Sports Pub. We're with you until 6:30 on the Fan. College football playoffs kick off tonight, on into the weekend, and then a great 16th week in the NFL to preview. But I wanted to start really quickly, while we have a moment, with the Washington Nationals, who yesterday did spend $9 million in real money, so I give them credit for that.
Hey,
they spent
all right.
$9 million, not in Monopoly money. But they went out and they kicked the tires on and acquired a pitcher who struggled last year pretty immensely. Former top prospect with the Braves, Mike Soroka, was a runner-up in the Rookie of the Year vote. His first year in the big leagues was an all-star, actually, early in his career. But in 2020, in the pandemic year, he got hurt and barely played. And then he missed all of 21 and all of 22. So most teams looked at his body of work from this past season with the White Sox, where he was really bad as a starter and really good out of the bullpen, and most teams said, we'll pay you a little bit of money as a reliever. The Nationals, to acquire him, from what I can tell, were the team that said, we're going to give you a spot in the rotation, we'll give you $9 million, and we'll give you a chance to recapture your career. So we chose Washington, and that's kind of where they're at now.
That's where they got with Trevor Williams, the same process,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Like in their rebuild, that's kind of the deal at this point. So I don't hate the move. It's a little more money than I would have probably paid for Mike Soroka. But in the same way that when someone goes for a fourth down and doesn't get it, I'm not going to beat them up because I like the idea of being aggressive. I cannot be angry when the Nats spend any money. This is a low-risk, potentially decent reward move. Worst-case scenario, Danny, you move him to the bullpen, and he ends up...
He's an expensive reliever. He's
being an overpaid, like, not very good middle reliever. But there is also a path to him being a five-and-dive quality decent fifth starter.
So he changed his pitch mix last year a little bit when he went to the bullpen and experienced more success. Maybe that pitch mix that he switched to can now be used as a starter, right? It's not as if he just abandoned something. He's, you know, a little bit more four-seam fastball, you know, to go with his breaking ball.
His numbers, by the way, against his slider and his four-seamer were marvelous.
Yeah.
He got just rocked when he would throw his sinker.
Right, so he, I don't know, he abandoned his sinker, but pretty much abandoned his sinker, right? So maybe that's what you do now, that you find something like that and a value where nobody else did. That's what you do when you're on a shoestring budget. The problem is they're on a shoestring budget. That $9 million could have gone to Kyle Finnegan, and I'd rather have, you know, if it works out, 150 innings out of Mike Soroka than innings from Kyle Finnegan. That's basic math, and that's fine. The point is, the idea that it's impossible to fathom doing both things is outrageous still. So, again, I'm happy they signed Mike Soroka. I'm into it. I think it's smart. I think it's shrewd. I think they're hoping that they found something where no one else did. Maybe he's a trade candidate. If he's throwing well, I have no idea. But the point is, it feels like, look, see what we did? You use the money. That was should have been Finnegan's to sign that guy, and it's not that much of a big deal.
Here's the bigger issue to me. Today, Christian Walker, who is one of the players that I was told that they liked the most in this free agent market, who a lot of the baseball people in Washington have kind of highlighted since late last season as, here's a guy we'd like to go sign, agreed to a deal, according to reports, for $60 million over 3 years, so $20 million AAV, to play for the Houston Astros. The Nationals were kind of nowhere to be found at the end of that negotiation. This is the market well below the top-of-the-line sluggers. They have not really in any meaningful way been linked to Pete Alonso. Their name, the team name, has come up occasionally. But I would say the exact same thing about some of the other top bats. There's a 40-homer bat from Baltimore.
Yeah, it's come up in a this-would-make-sense-for-them kind of way, not in a they're-linked-to-them kind of way.
So at this point, I would say that the Nationals, as far as power, which costs a lot of money, are not only not in the top tier, but the middle tier first base slugger, because of his age, who wasn't going to get more than 20, was only going to sign for a couple to 3 years. They also weren't in on that market. So I know that we're not supposed to be upset yet, according to all the blogs out there that love the Nationals. But let me know when it's time that we can start being upset, because it's starting to look, as we had predicted a couple weeks ago, like this offseason is headed toward a light spending, not particularly impactful free agency, which is not what this was supposed to be.
Yeah, you're in the Ty France tier now, if that's even a thing.
This was supposed to be the offseason where they spent, where they got aggressive, where they married the young guys like James Wood and Dylan Cruz and C.J. Abrams to some impacts, veteran players. You know, they're going to end up probably with like Anthony Rizzo or Paul Goldschmidt, if I had to guess, at first base. And those guys have resumes and have played in World Series and All-Star games, and so you'll be able to trick some people into being pretty fired up. But that is not what this offseason should have been about, in my opinion. Hopefully there's still a move or two that we don't see coming that hits us in the face here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, you could spend $30, $40, $50, $60 million and still be well below some of the elite teams in baseball by, you know, $100 million, give or take. My worry and my fear is that this ownership group, and I guess this is not based on anything other than just, you know, read the same stuff that you guys are, looks at it and goes, well, money's coming out of our accounts and going to players, Scherzer, Strasburg, and others. What's the difference? In other words, like, we don't have the money. The money's the money. So whereas we're going, your Major League Baseball team payroll needs to be higher, their response might be the money's leaving our account either way. Not that they know the difference. They'll be better if they spend money. But the point is, I don't think the money's there. I think they're still tied up with the $36 million plus that's going to Strasburg. However much, $7 million I think it is, that's still owed to Scherzer in deferments. To me, this is the central issue, is that they just don't have it. And they're not willing to spend it what they don't have.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Next, let's scout the opponent and check in on the Eagles with one of their beat reporters. Who's in, who's out? Is A.J. Brown healthy enough to hurt Washington this weekend? We're going to find out on The Fan.